There are more than 100,000 children currently in some form of kinship care in Australia. It's a family dynamic born out of a stark reality when a parent can no longer look after their child. Either a family member steps up or that child enters the formal out-of-home care system. And experts estimate more than half of all kinship carers in Australia are grandparents. And so the relationship shifts. Chocolate treats become no one leaves the dinner table without eating their veggies. Spontaneous splurging on a cute new outfit becomes stressing over paying for school uniforms. And taking a day off work to watch them once a week becomes managing their daily schedule, school pickups, extracurriculars, all while trying to maintain your own. It's a juggle you thought you'd left behind, but it's something that came up in your stories last week in episode one of The Grandparent Trap. Throughout July on Life Matters, we're unpacking what it means to be a grandparent in 2026 in this special series based on your stories. Today, we're looking at raising children the second time around and ask what happens when grandparenting stops being optional. I'd love to hear from you today. What does this look like for your family? Have you had to take over the care of your grandkids on a more permanent basis? Tell me your story. And it is the reality for Lou, Nanny Lou, to her grandkids. Lou, thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
It's great to have you with me. Before you became Nanny Lou, what did you think grandparenting would be like?
Oh, wow. Well, I imagine spoiling the kids, hyping them up, taking them shopping, outings, and then handing them back and forgetting all that at the end of the day and laying back and, you know, having that cuppa and forgetting about it.
Not the reality.
No.
When did you realise that was not going to be your experience?
Well, very early in the piece, from before 1 year old, I've been raising my first lot of grandchildren. So for many years, so it's been 17 years of grandparenting.
How many kids have you got?
Seven.
Seven grandkids.
Seven grandchildren. Yes, from primary school now to high school, I've been through all the things that's been responsible in that.
Okay, so that is an enormous number of kids at a time of your life where you probably weren't expecting that. Can you just paint a picture of what a typical day looks like in your household at the moment?
Wow, we call it organised chaos. So I've got to have structure. If I don't have that, the wheels are going to turn off. So we have a chore book. We have all children have to do chores. It rotates monthly, you know, so they've all got to be a part of it. Because there is many appointments you've got to go to, specialist therapy, all that sort of things. The meal times are huge. You can imagine a bench lined up with all the meals, dishes, they've all got to do. So it's lots of things going on in the household.
And what has it meant for your own work?
Well, I've had to cut that dramatically because you've got to be able to go to that sporting events. Schools ring you up, they've got a problem with little Johnny. You've got to be able to go to that. Mm. They've got to go to the specialists. And I can't be saying to work, I can't come in today. So I've cut it back to casual and that comes first. You don't think about it. It's just the way it is. I'm raising them kids.
How do you physically move that many kids around? Like, talk me through logistics.
Oh, so you just got to have, I've got to keep a calendar. My calendar has no spaces in it. People look at it and it's like, wow. So, you know, and even to the transport, I've had to get a minivan, draw from, you know, the mortgage to be able to afford that. And I've had to get a truck license because a 14-seater, so I had to go through the driving school to get that truck license. So, you know, I'm qualified, but yeah.
You're telling me this story with such a giant smile on your face. You're obviously making the best of this situation, but I'm hearing you say that you've had to shell out for licenses, you've cut back on work, you've taken out a loan to buy this minivan. This has impacted you in a real way.
Oh, 100%. Where people have, when they're raising children, they've got decades ahead of them to save up for their retirement. I won't have that. I've dipped into, you know, to it. It's all gone away.
Mm, mm. Do you have a long-term plan or are you kind of just winging it at this stage?
I'm just winging it. It is what it is. The children are coming first. I would love to be able to plan for the future, but I've got a few years left to go.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. This is the series, The Grandparent Trap. We're talking about what it means to be a grandparent in 2026. Today, we are talking about finding yourself doing it full time again. I'm talking to Nanny Lou. She takes care of her 7 grandkids she has since the first one was less than 1 year old. A big long-term commitment. If this is something that you have lived through, I'd really love to hear your story as well. Is what Nanny Lou's saying resonating with you? My number's 0418 226 576. Also here with us are Dr. Meredith Corrali, who's an honorary fellow at the University of Melbourne and founder of Kinship Alliance Australia, and Dr. Jocelyn Jones, who's an associate professor at Edith Cowan University, researching kinship care for Aboriginal families in Western Australia. Welcome to you both. Jocelyn, I might start with you. We're talking to you as a researcher, but you are also a kinship carer yourself.
Yes, I am. I care for 2 children, 9-year-old and a 3.5-year-old.
Listening to Lou's story, how's that hitting for you?
Yeah, that resonates so clearly, experiencing the same kind of issues as Lou. And, yeah, it's hard to juggle the children and going to work and, yeah, like she says, going to, you know, family events, to school appointments. And, yeah, it's kind of, I don't know about organised chaos in my house. I think it's more like just chaos.
Chaos.
But we managed to get there. And it's always, you know, in the car, but you've still got your shoelaces to tie, or, you know, your bags left on the carport. So, yeah, it can be really, you know, exciting in some ways, but it's also very draining, emotionally draining as well in other ways. But I think it's so rewarding, and where would we be without having that opportunity to give some children in your family a place to live and to grow and to, you know, still stay connected to culture, still stay connected to the family. And I think that's where the reward comes in, and that's what motivates the Aboriginal carers that do this position, you know, do the caring role.
Yeah, so that's what you're looking at, is this sort of attitudes among First Nations grandparents. What do they tell you?
So for many of the grandparents that we talk to, so we talked to 46 grandparent carers throughout Western Australia. So many of them saying it isn't, you know, it's not really seen as a choice. It's a family and it's a cultural responsibility and obligation, and they have to make it work. And they step in because they want to keep, you know, these children and their family safe. They want to keep them connected to culture and to family and also to country. I mean, that's very important. We know in WA we have children who might be from the Kimberley area that are placed with homes in, you know, down in Noongar country, and that's not ideal. So, that, you know, that's a real motivator too for a lot of families that live in our regional and remote areas. And many grandparents told us that, you know, these are our babies, and they feel a deep obligation to care for them rather than see them into that that child protection system or to be placed with strangers. And usually it's, you know, it's non-Aboriginal people, and they look at that difference in the cultural context as well. And also I think there's this, you know, this love and connection with their, you know, with their grandchildren and preserving that cultural identity. They were the most powerful motivators, not wanting to grow up and not know where they came from and who their family was. And a lot of the kinship carers that we spoke to, you know, were part of the stolen generation. So they didn't want that to happen to, you know, the children in their family. So, and some of these kinship carers had the children from when they were infants and babies and have raised them up. And, you know, like Lou, they've got multiple, you know, children in their care that they are trying to care for. And, yeah, so that's some of the sort of issues that we found in our research. And also a lot of the carers are informal carers, not formal carers, so therefore they're not getting that support, that financial and other support offered through the formal care system.
Absolutely. Well, Meredith, that work of being an informal carer is a big reason why you founded Kinship Alliance Australia. Can you talk to me about that?
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on this morning. I think Nanny Lou and Jocelyn have described many of the issues very clearly. And from the research that I've done over many years, my research echoes very much what they've said, that there's a tremendous lack of support for kinship carers, particularly for the vast majority who have informal care arrangements, meaning that they're not involved with state or territory child protection and usually don't receive a care allowance as a result of that. The supports, what there are very few and fragmented in terms of access. So Western Australia has a very small care allowance. South Australia and Queensland have limited social care support. Other states don't have any for informal kinship carers. There are support groups around the country that provide valuable peer support, but that doesn't change the fact that there isn't much in terms of the nuts and bolts of what they need. So Kinship Care Alliance Australia was established to provide a direction, help people find what is available, but also to work towards change, because we really think that kinship carers, whether formal or informal, need the same sort of support as other carers to do the important work they do.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. This is our special series, The Grandparent Trap. We're talking about finding yourself as the full-time carer for your grandkids today. You're telling me your stories, 0418 226 576. Linda says, we took our granddaughter out of a situation where she was being abused. At the age of 9, she walked the streets twice in the early hours to get to our home. We now have a gorgeous 18-year-old who is thriving. Light at the end of a dark tunnel. And Pauline says, my daughter died, leaving two children who came to me. Eventually, my son and his girlfriend got the children, and I played a significant role in helping raise them. After 2 years, the girlfriend suddenly blocked all the grandparents from seeing them. I've been half heartbroken trying to navigate a legal way to see them. Such a complex issue, such complex family dynamics going on here. Well, the voices you've been hearing are that of Nanny Lou, who's caring for her 7 grandkids, Dr. Meredith Kiraly from the University of Melbourne and the founder of Kinship Alliance Australia, and Dr. Jocelyn Jones from Edith Cowan University. Jocelyn, is there a sense of it being almost expected that the grandparents will step up? Do people realise what a big deal it is to take this caring role on?
I don't think people do. They aren't able to divide between being a babysitter and being a full-time carer. So they're not just babysitting and then they can take them back to their parents. They're parenting all over again. So, and often in their 50s, 60s and sometimes 70s. Well, in fact, we had two carers that were in the 80 range bracket. And we also had just under 50% of our carers out of the 46 were in a 50 to 59 back bracket. So we're seeing that, it's the older grandparent kids are being taken on at that age. And often those are those children that might have come to those those grandparents as babies. And they're taking children to school, to medical appointments, sporting activities, helping with homework. And who can, what person in their 50 or 60 can do algebra? and providing that emotional support, often while managing their own health and financial pressures. So they're doing everything a parent does, but often with much less support. They don't have that financial support that kind of does help the informal ones that might help those that are receiving a government payment. So, you know, there's lots of extra expenses that they have to pay. Like, you know, they might have to buy extra, you know, bedding, beds, furniture, school bags, school uniform. And I think there's that expectation as a carer that, you know, as a grandparent carer that, you know, the children are, you know, they're well cared for as well. So they have to be able to provide all those things that children need, you know, to excel at school, to excel in sport. So, you know, it does take extra money. But the other thing is too, you know, at that age group, they have declining health themselves. So how do they manage to, you know, get, you know, deal with their own health, you know, chronic health issues? Visit also other family, Aboriginal people are very disadvantaged in relation to health. So there's also other family commitments that they have as well to other family members. So, you know, it's a whole range of different things that they have to deal with, as well as, you know, providing that really good quality informal care, which we do see. Mm. And we see them, you know, the grandparent carers talk about how important it was to take the children out on country to make sure they took them to, you know, cultural activities, and, you know, also being able to have money to send them on cultural activities at, you know, at school and just excursions. But I think one of the important things they wanted to do was really keep them connected to culture and country and family. So.
Lou, do you feel like you get the support that you need to be able to do all the stuff that you do for your kids?
No. To be honest, no. There was a lot of, as I said, taking back from what I'd say my nest egg for the future. You know, am I ever going to see the mortgage paid off? Those sorts of things. My time is getting shorter. But I get support from family in a way that they will come and help me if I need to go and get something at the shop rather than load up all the kids to go to the shop. You know, if I need a bit of a help around the house or I need something dug out of the shed, I get that support. But I do have an organisation called Time for Grandparents, which is that peer group, which is great to brainstorm that I'm not alone. There's other people walking in similar shoes. We've got stories to share, which is great. And they also will help out a little financially with sporting events and, you know, camps for school. So they have been very beneficial to me, but not to what we should be receiving as we're raising grandchildren.
Meredith, it's interesting Lou mentioning Time for Grandparents, the organisation that she's got. You're really trying to bring together a lot of different grassroots organisations with Kinship Alliance.
That's right. We seek to engage with all the organisations across the country that we know of who are providing support. But our experience is that it's a very fragmented. The arrangements are very fragmented, very few and very fragmented. And the story that Nanny Lou has described, as well as what Jocelyn's talked about, really demonstrate what all the research shows us, that every study of grandparent carers and other kinship carers as well has shown that the issue that comes up in every study is financial stress and often frank poverty. So this is the area that we're really focusing on right now, knowing also that social care support is really important, particularly where there's been drug misuse in the family, there may be threats or actual violence, and that children have suffered trauma, so they may have emotional or behavioural problems. But one of the things that we really want to see is two things, really: legal recognition for all grandparents and other kinship carers in all the Commonwealth and State Carer Recognition Acts. And beyond that, we really want to see a social security benefit for the support of children without parental support. So two countries in the world have gone way ahead of us and other countries in this regard. New Zealand and Ireland are the two. New Zealand, both of them have redeveloped their orphan benefits to provide substantial support for children without parental support. And this really stands to make an enormous difference to the lives of these vulnerable children and the families who take them on, who sometimes we think that kinship care, grandparent kinship care is great for the kids, but it's very much at the cost of the carers and their own futures and well-being.
Meredith, there's a question that's come through on the text line saying, are the carers grandparents or grandmothers? What is the ratio of grandmothers to grandfathers doing the caring?
That's a good question. The research suggests that 80 to 90% of the carers are grandmothers, and many of them are on their own, so it really is just grandmothers in those cases. We do have to remember that quite often there's a grandfather in the background or a grandmother's partner, and those people can be a little bit shadowy. Sometimes they do provide a lot of both emotional and, where possible, financial support as well. But predominantly, the caring falls on women.
So, Lou, you're essentially parenting a second time around. What are you having to learn again or learn for the first time?
Well, what I'm struggling is, and I've got to learn, is the technology these days. You know, they've got the TikTok, the Instagram, and keeping up to date with all that, and their lingo. It's all changed. They can talk in code, and I've got to find it out, you know. And there's different matters of security when they want to go out. There's different dangers than there was when I was raising my children.
What are you hoping for your grandkids?
I just want the best for them, to realise that I've given them the best opportunity that I could. I want them to hold their head up high, you know, reach out for their dreams, be good working citizens, and just be the best versions of themselves.
You're managing this relationship with your grandkids essentially being your kids. What has that meant for your relationship with your children?
Well, it is what it is, and everybody knows that that's what you do. The children, I still have that relationship. You know, I'm sort of, you know.
Yeah. So you've got these kids. You're still a decade away from having them all big kids.
Yes.
Do you reckon you end up being able to do the grey nomad thing at some stage?
One could only hope. That's a dream. But at the end of the day, I don't care if I'm sitting back in my rocking chair just living the memories that I've made throughout the time.
Well, Lou, Meredith, Jocelyn, thank you all so much for sharing with me this morning. Nanny Lou, caring for her seven grandkids. Dr. Meredith Kiraly is an honorary fellow at the University of Melbourne and the founder of Kinship Alliance Australia. And Dr. Jocelyn Jones, associate professor at Edith Cowan University, researching kinship care for Aboriginal families in Western Australia. Thank you for your stories as well. One person says, my sister is 64. She has brought up two batches of kids. Now she's bringing up her five-year-old granddaughter. I know she gets stressed out, but she persists. She could not allow her granddaughter to go into foster care. She must keep the family together.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.